annals of history.
There has been some mighty trios. Alvin and the Chipmunks, Harry, Ron and Hermione, and the Bee Gees.
Well, sure, there's only one of them now, but you get the drift.
Now, from a small bedroom in Queanbeyan,
these three men will try and make sense of the world with their words. And if words fail them, there's always this.
Ben Edwards with a huge finish!
But let's hope it doesn't come to that.
Thanks to the butcher shop, Dixon and Kayleen. Please welcome Scotty, No I Don't Know Why I Got Fired Masters, Ben the Governor Edwards,
and Steve, Golden Tonsils Payos.
Well, we've had a little bit of a break, but we are back. It is Season 2, Episode 9 of the Give Yourself an Uppercut podcast. I'm Scotty Masters.
I'm Benny Edwards.
And I'm Stevie Payos.
And welcome back.
Welcome back, boys.
Well, welcome back to Steve and I from our hiatus, and welcome back to you from somewhere else,
from mate. From the other side. Yeah. Yes, yeah. I died a couple of weeks ago, folks.
Which religion? Is it too soon to joke about religion? Which one's right?
No, well, none of them.
That's what I thought. That's what I thought.
Absolutely nothing. I'll get into it a bit later, but yeah, without sounding alarmist, I did pass away for about 90 seconds, but I was brought back to life due to a very dedicated surgical team. But we'll have details on that later on.
Yes, please.
Yeah, indeed. Boys, yes, I know we all saw it on the weekend, the big fight, Mayweather v. McGregor. Social media warriors and experts meltdown. Have come out in force the last few days. So I know you're going to get to it,
but we'll talk syndrome. About it. But boxing expert syndrome.
Overall, a thumbs up. We haven't even discussed this. We've just started recording. So thumbs up, thumbs down if you thought it was, you know, a good spectacle and it was decent to watch. So on count three, 1, 2, 3. That's three. Oh, two thumbs up, one thumb down. Stevie Payos says no.
Maybe that's not the thing. In terms of value of watching it, yeah, I'll give it a thumbs up. Yeah. But in terms of what went on in the fight, I'm not going to say anything, though, because I'm really, really interested in hearing what Ben Edwards has to say about this. So I want to wait and hear what he has to say before I make my comments. I'm not going to say anything until I've heard what Benny says.
Yeah, nice.
As a spectacle, though, it was definitely great entertainment, and that's what I spoke about on social media late last week. I said, everyone just calm down and just watch it. How about everyone just stops all the extra
warriors?
So much hate. Spot on, wasn't it? Just get on with it. Why? Both sports are going to carry on.
Please wait for the real fight, Canelo Triple G. Yeah, that's an all-time great fight, but shit.
Yeah. Enjoy what's ahead of it. It's history. Exactly right. So, I want to hear what Benny's got to say, but I will say my bit as we all will.
It was MMA meets UFC meets WrestleMania is what it was.
It had all the vibes of the big wrestling
event. It's awesome, man. It's just it sort of happened before with Ali and Inoki in the 60s, but that was a bit of a dud. It was just, it's a bit of fun. It was awesome.
It is what it is. History. It was what it was.
Great for MMA. How big has MMA gotten where they can actually compete with the best fighter of this generation?
Yeah.
In terms of an all-time grade, he's like top 50, but
currently he's awesome. If this makes up some of what you're going to say, Benny, just say hold your fire. More so this morning on social media than across the weekend, reports are coming now that, and I've seen the video proof that Conor was pulling his punches. Like, are you going to talk about any of that?
I saw the video and he wasn't pulling his punches.
Yeah, I don't know. A couple of those punches look like he didn't follow through too much. But again, unless you're actually in the ring trading blows, it's very easy to sit on the outside and go, oh, well, you should have followed through.
He didn't pull shit. Yeah. It's hard to fight a guy when he's in. Because Floyd, I'm going to go into it in depth, but the way Floyd was fighting, hands up on the inside, was not his usual Philly shell style on the outside, which doesn't work too well with lefty. So, he's a boxing genius, man.
All right. Well, we'll get to that. A couple of cracking tunes as well. We're going to kick off the podcast this week, thanks to the crew at the Butcher Shop with Black Country Communion, who I think we may have played once on the podcast last year. These guys are a super group that were put together by South African turned Aussie producer Kevin Shirley, who's responsible for Iron Maiden, Silverchair, the Screaming Jets, Joe Bonamassa, and people like that. And this supergroup is Joe Bonamassa, the blues legend on guitar, Jason Bonham, the drumming legend, the son of John Bonham from Led Zeppelin, Glenn Hughes, the voice of Deep Purple, and Black Sabbath from the 70s. He replaced both singers in both of those bands, and he's a kick-ass bassist. They call him the voice of rock. And Derek Sherinian from Dream Theater on keys. And the sound these boys makes is just sensational.
On keyboard.
He's on keyboard,
Don't Dream Theater have like one of the best drummers ever or something?
Yeah, well, they did, yes. And then he left, and Mike Portnoy's got his own band now. There was a big fallout. But,
Oh, really?
So Dream Theater, You know, they're all their songs are 10, 12 minutes long, and only musos go to their concerts, and they'll stand there and just stare at them and watch and go, I could have done that better. And like, they're awesome. But Derek Sherinian goes old school and plays the Hammonds and stuff in this. So the new album's
What's
on
Hammond?
The way. Hammond keyboard. You'd know them, old school thing with a big Leslie speaker on them. They're cool as, man.
Oh,
it's
Leslie.
Like what your nan used to have in the lounge room. You would have seen an old Hammond with all the Bloody keys, hell. The multiple keys and stuff
yeah.
on it.
Like so, a big organ at church.
Yeah, big time. Yeah, that kind of thing. So anyway, let's get stuck into this one. It's the first single off the new album, BCC4. This is Collide. It's the Give Yourself an Uppercut podcast with Scotty, Ben and Steve. Thanks to The Butcher Shop.
By Black Country Communion from their new album BCCIV, which is
Black Roman Country Communion 4.
That's yes. right. So there we go. Now we move on to our first segment of the day. It's Benny's Bifferama. Take it away, my friend.
He's put more people to sleep in the ring than you've had hot dinners. He's faced the biggest and meanest dudes on the planet.
Another dramatic
So now it's time for Ben's Bifforama.
That's insane in the membrane. Have we already done the intro?
Well, I just played it then, Ben.
That's awesome.
Yeah, fantastic.
That was, man, that was quick, man.
Wasn't it?
All right, so obviously the money fight, a.k.a. the biggest fight in combat sports history, the undefeated 11-time world champion over five different weight divisions, Floyd Mayweather, took on the former UFC featherweight champion and current lightweight champion, Conor McGregor. He extended his undefeated streak to 50-0, beating Rocky Marciano's record. But as I've said before, I don't understand why that's held in such a high regard, because there's been five other fighters that actually got to 49-0. They just didn't retire. They just kept on and fighting.
Yep.
One of them, as I mentioned last time, Julio Cesar Chavez was 87-0 before he had a draw with Pernell Whittaker. So I don't know where everyone's like, 49-0, let's retire. There's,
yeah.
It's not new ground, you know. It's happened before. But anyway, so both guys, well, one guy, the Maltese with eyeballs, guaranteed $100 million straight up.
Yeah.
Like $100 million before pay-per-view, before everything. Conor was guaranteed $30 million. And I've just lost my page. But I'm back. I'm back.
All right.
And so when the pay-per-view is all said and done, you can times both those by about 2.5.
You
so
reckon?
Yeah, that's what they reckon. So Floyd's probably going to get about 250 and Conor's going to get close to 100 mil.
Yeah, wow.
So first four rounds were all Conor. In first three rounds definitely went to Conor.
Yeah.
A lot of people gave him the eighth round as well, but Floyd was very, very, very smart and calculated. Everyone thought he was going to come out in his Philly shell like he always does, which doesn't work well against a left-handed guy, which Conor is. He tried that at the start, got tagged a little bit, tried fighting off the ropes, got tagged a little bit, put his hands up, came forward, went to the body, full Mexican style, as Conor said after the fight. As Conor said after as well, he adjusted his game plan three times, which was noticeable. And he was awesome, mate.
Yeah.
It's just unbelievable. There's a few memes about him taking 10 rounds to beat a first timer, but that's just so stupid. You don't get the 50-0 by taking unnecessary risk and not being patient.
Yeah, that's right. He's one of the most risk-adverse boxers there's ever been, isn't he?
Yeah, but that's why he's 50-0. He's maybe not necessarily be a fan favorite, but, mate, 50-0. And Conor said afterwards, he's just so composed in there. He's been there a million times. No one hit the canvas, and some people say it was an early stoppage, but there is no standing eight count in Nevada. You know, maybe you should have let him take a knee or not, but you can't really complain too much.
I arced up when they stopped it, but when you saw the replay, you go, actually, you know what? He was done.
He didn't throw a punch for the whole minute previous. So even if he threw one or two punches, I'm sure the ref probably would have let him finish the round. But he was doing the stanky leg, and it was looking pretty ugly. So
and you could see there's a really good piece where they showed like some replays, and the commentators were going over it in the post fight coverage. Yeah. And you could hear them saying, here's the ref about to come in and stop it. No, waited a sec. He's about to go in again, gave him another chance. And then did call it. So I don't think anyone can complain with the stoppage when it was.
Yeah, a lot of people are blaming Paulie Malignaggi. So the whole for Conor's performance and all that. But the whole thing with Paulie was he was talking a whole bunch of trash on Conor in months before, even before the fight got announced, saying, you know, Paulie Malignaggi is a welterweight, two-time world champion. Like, the guy's a gun, but zero punching power, and he has been retired. So Conor invited him into camp for sparring, and we've all seen the footage of the sparring and stuff. It wasn't putting Paulie in the best light.
No.
But Paulie actually said, I said nothing to Floyd. There's nothing, and I agree with him. There's nothing he could have told Floyd that Floyd didn't already know. Mm-hmm. So I don't think having a mole, quote unquote, in Conor's camp really had that much of an effect. It was a very different fight to what I expected. As I said before, he started Philly Shell, came off the ropes, ended up coming forward, which he hasn't done for quite a long time, went to the body. Very, very smart fighting. But Conor's stock did not dip at all. His stock's gone through the roof, and it's put him in a great spot for negotiations with the UFC. And Dana's actually said that they're going to seriously consider him, giving him some equity in the company, which Conor suggested after his lightweight title win against Eddie Alvarez. And there's some interesting stats that came out after the fight. It was illegally streamed by nearly 3 million people.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, this was saw this today.
Crazy, man. The WBC made the money belt just specifically for the fight. Now, I know there's too many belts as it is, but I reckon for this occasion, yeah, why not?
Yep.
And the money belt lives up to its name. It's made out of Italian alligator leather. There's 1.5 kilograms of 24-karat gold, 3,360 diamonds, 600 sapphires, and 300 emeralds on that belt.
Bloody hell.
And I couldn't get an actual what the belt was worth. But I'm sure someone could do the math.
Be a few bob.
Oh, that's insane.
Couple of rockets on that one.
The attendance of 14,623 people broke the gate record of 72 million, which was set by Pacquiao and Mayweather. It cracked 80 million people. There were still 5,000 seats left. It's expected to surpass the Pacquiao Mayweather pay-per-view of 4.5 million. They reckon it's trending to crack 4.9 million pay-per-views.
Wow.
And Mayweather made 25 million in sponsorship alone. Now, I think that's just from Hublot, the watch brand on his shorts, because he didn't have nothing else on there. So
no.
I reckon, but they were in his last fight too. So he said they
he had $1.9 million trunks as well, or something like that, didn't he? Yeah, the trunks he wore out were worth $1 million or something. That
really?
Yeah, absolutely.
How was that Muppet that's from his gym that fought beforehand?
Badu Jack.
With the, with,
or Javonte.
Yeah, Javonte. Those shorts.
Yeah.
Like, seriously. It's mate, fluffy. Those shorts would have fit around my fat ass. Like, what's going on with those shorts?
Yeah, the Blue Smurf.
Yeah, the Blue Smurf stuff in the helmet.
What about his shorts? Because I know Mayweather's worn, like, some real fancy leathers and stuff before.
Yeah, but I read that he got the shorts custom made and they were worth
$1 million
or something like that.
Bloody hell.
Just with diamonds and all the things that he had encrusted in them. And then his robe that he wore out, like in the robe he had underneath his mask and stuff, was worth 1.9 or something like that.
And he bought a ski mask from the local army disposal store.
Probably got that from Uncle Roger.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts, Stevie?
Look, my thoughts on the fight were, and like I'm not as much of an expert on you as this, but I really felt like Floyd carried him at certain points in that fight. I thought he could have done a lot more damage in the first three rounds. Do you think that, Benny? I mean,
I reckon. What's the point? Why bother taking a risk when he can just sit back,
wear him out,
let him waste a bit of his energy, because it's his first boxing fight. He's always going to be go a bit too hard, and then the champions always save themselves for the last couple of rounds. There's no rush. He's got 36 minutes to do his work.
Yeah, I mean, I just felt that there was points in the fight where it seemed like Mayweather wasn't taking the mickey as such, but it just felt like it was a little bit too easy for him, and that's where the disparity in terms of the quality of the two fighters came out. And there's no doubt that McGregor, you know, acquitted himself really well, and then I think you can look at this as a success in terms of the two sports coming together, someone showing their own against, as you said, you know, one of the greatest there is at the moment, and where he sits all time, we can determine that in 15 or 20 years, I guess, but it just felt like there were times when Mayweather was just doing that a little bit too easy. But yes, that's a very good point you raise. Is it just a case that he knew he didn't have to, so therefore I'll just sit back? You know, maybe that's like a team sport.
Yeah.
You know, in any capacity, knowing you just if you're good enough and stick to the basics, you'll beat a team so comfortably that you don't need to take any risks.
Yeah.
Well, Floyd said his game plan was to let Conor have a look at him, let him use his energy early, and try and catch him down the stretch, which is exactly what happened.
And he didn't really get clipped. I mean, you know, significantly.
No, he got cut. There was one decent uppercut that he caught early on.
But he ate it pretty well. Yeah. He's got a good chin. He's super fit, obviously.
So apart from that, I mean, there were times where I thought that. The second thing was I thought McGregor probably, you know, the smack talk was evident in the early days about how much he was going to come out. But he potentially could have gone a little bit harder early on. I mean, noting that Mayweather was sitting back so much. Like you said, did catch him with a couple of good shots. Was there an opportunity to hit him with a few more? What do you think, Benny? Was it a case that he himself wanted to get into the fight as well and make it last to an extent? Or did he not want to get caught on the counter? But maybe there's a few more. Once he had that aggressive streak in the first couple of rounds, you thought maybe after round three or four, all right, I'm really going to have a go at this guy now and try and...
I think Mayweather's so defensively good. Conor was just worried about wasting his energy and didn't want to gas down the stretches, which is what ended up happening anyway.
Yeah,
I think he just didn't want to waste his energy on his gloves. As I said, we all thought, well, you know, the general consensus was that Floyd was going to come out with his Philly shell like he always does.
Yeah.
And where you're a bit more susceptible to left hands from a southpaw and that, but he didn't do it. He had his hands up, and Conor was just hitting his gloves all the time because Floyd was right in the pocket. And where being the smaller man can actually be an advantage. So,
what did you make of the amount of respect that they had for each other at the end? Was that a case of, you know, they always did respect each other and the smack talk was purely for show? Or was it a case that, you know, it was always going to be that way that, you know, we'll put on the show as much as we need to, but yeah, at the end of the day, we're always going to respect each other as fighters.
I think Conor's just one of those dudes who just speaks his mind. He was always like, he hasn't spoken crap about everyone he's fought in the UFC. Like Max Holloway, him and they were totally respectful to each other.
Yeah,
but Conor's just one of those dudes. He's not scared to say what he wants and then eat his words after it if he doesn't work
out. And that's the thing again. When he lost again, he was humble. He, you know, fair play. A word he said in that first 60 seconds, but, you know, fair play to him and just said all the right things.
Yeah. In victory and defeat, he's always like that, and he always shows respect after.
But
I'll tell you who came off bad was Jose Aldo. He just did like the crying
what
laughy
a wanker.
Thing. I used what to love Jose, but he's just gone off the... He just looks like a bitter ex-girlfriend or something. You know what I mean? He's just seeing Conor just make so much money and have so much success.
Yeah.
He's just coming off so bad. What are you laughing at, Jose? He just made 100 mil.
And
the thing that makes
you're in the favelas in Brazil.
The sort of amount of money you dream of. That's all.
And that's the thing with Jose too.
Jose's biggest payday was $4 million from Conor.
You know, he took 13 seconds to dismantle you, and you can say it's lucky or not, but you got tagged and you ate the canvas.
Absolutely.
So you lost.
Yeah,
you lost fair and square. Yeah. There was no judge's decision. You didn't know what day it was.
Mate, that's just ruined.
Show some respect.
Respect.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah, look, it was you know, in terms of the entertainment value, I thought it was definitely good. I mean, we had a good day. We enjoyed watching it. You're always going to come up with a philosophical questions afterwards about what could have been, but look, it went the distance, and I think the people who had a fear of the pay-per-view, like this will ruin pay-per-view in terms of, you know, who's going to watch this because it's going to turn into such a farce. I think most people, you know, the 95% of people who aren't those real boxing purists would have bought that, sat down, got some mates over, gone to the pub.
My missus came to the pub. She never watches fights. And she came down to the pub with me and a couple of mates and watched it just because of all the hoo-ha around it.
That's right. And because it went so long, because you got that sort of 35, 40 minutes out of it in terms of rounds and time in between rounds, it kept everybody involved, would have kept everybody talking
about it.
Every
pub was happy because I know it cost $1,800 for a pub to buy it.
Yeah.
And that's what it cost down at Walsh's for them to have it.
Yeah.
And
get that back in 5 minutes.
The place was packed.
Yeah.
The place was packed. The Hellenic Club was packed.
I heard the Royal was packed. The Toppy was packed. Everywhere was just full. Everyone was out and about, weren't they, on their Sunday afternoon watching it.
So, well, it was either that or be out in the bloody snow.
Yeah.
How ridiculous was Sunday Arvo?
Yeah,
great place to be.
I don't know about Sunday Arvo, but I know Sunday night I've had a few too many beverages and was taking a nap in the street. I was bloody cold on the concrete.
Is that when you sent out the message, can someone please come
and
drive me home?
The mad dog Leo Mysterious came and got me. I was in a world of hurt.
The cavalry arrived after all that.
All I remember was just laying there on the street playing on my phone, just swiping right to everything on Tinder. Wait for Leo to come grab me.
Please.
It was a disaster.
Waiting for the positives.
Damn fireball whiskey, man.
He's at it for Floyd now, Benny. That's got to be
it
now for him, surely.
Yeah,
there's no way he's coming back, is he?
I hope not. The only way he's coming back is if it's like 4 years down the track and he's got no money.
It'll be interesting to see if he sorts out his IRS problems and gets
surely.
The thing is, he burns through money like nobody's business. That's his problem. That's why he came out to do this, because I think it was 100%. 26 mil he was in debt to the IRS.
Right. Yeah, and he reckons he paid that off a few years ago. He posted photos of him paying that off 2 years ago, but then the rumours were still lingering.
Well, it is from 2015.
I thought it was a great spectacle. There are a couple of decent fights on the undercard, too.
Yeah, that Javonte, he's a banger, that kid, the one with the smurf.
He's a wanker, though. You can tell he's trained under Mayweather because he's a flog.
Yeah.
He's an absolute
he's the money
flog. So there you go. Will Triple G live up to this as far... It won't live up to this as far as pay-per-view, but it'll probably be a better fight, won't it?
Oh, mate, on paper, it's awesome.
Yeah
I'll touch more on that next week. But, mate, that's the two genuine number one and two. Take your pick who's one and two. But the biggest star in the world taking on the most dominant middleweight champ of all time, that's going to be unbelievable, man. I'm actually leaning towards Canelo. Even though, obviously, Golovkin's European style, he's more of a Mexican style than Canelo, because Canelo is actually like a really – I rate Canelo's defense, his head movement, how he slides off punches is awesome. Gennady doesn't. He just stands there and eats him. But that's part of the reason why he's got so much power on his shots, because he's not losing his balance. But I reckon I'm leaning towards Canelo to win that.
Yeah, well, Triple G likes to eat a punch to make a punch, doesn't he?
Yeah, absolutely, which is full Mexican style.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Comes forward hard, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And just one little note to finish up on, the legendary Miguel Cotto, the Puerto Rican, it was his retirement fight on the very same night. He's only 36 years old, but he's been around for a little while. But it was a sort of a HBO versus Showtime thing, which May Mac being the Showtime, and HBO were just too stubborn to like, nah, we're not moving our show. Yeah.
Golden Boy was involved too, wasn't he? Was De La Hoya involved in this as well, I think?
I don't think so for that one.
And then you're talking De La Hoya. Did you see the text the tweet he sent out during the week, and then Dana White just hammering him?
Yeah, absolutely gold. Yeah.
Or
Oscar De La Hoya or something.
I think Golden Boy, they're just putting all their eggs in the Canelo Golovkin fight. But this HBO one, the 6-time world champion of 4 weight classes, Puerto Rican legend Miguel Cotto took on the unheralded but super tough Japanese 34-year-old Yoshihiro Kamigai, who was 33 fights, 27 wins, 4 losses, 2 draws. Now, he's pretty much a punching bag for 12 rounds, but it's worth watching the highlights, man. This guy ate some shots.
Cotto looks so sharp.
He looked awesome, man. For 2 years off, he looked sensational. I really rate Cotto. And he retires with a record 46 fights, 41 wins, 5 losses and 33 KOs. So happy retirement to Miguel Cotto.
He's up there too, though. I mean, Cotto fought Mayweather, lost to Mayweather, but he's also been in the ring with a lot of the greats.
He's an all-time great. His fight with Canelo at the end of 2015, that was a masterpiece of boxing. Yeah. That was just something beautiful, man.
Yeah. Both of those
happy
too.
Happy retirement, Miguel. Thanks for the memories.
The Give Yourself an Uppercut podcast is recorded in a bedroom
in front of one very disinterested diamond python
and occasionally a ginger cat called Alan.
Alan! Alan! Alan!
Oh, that's not Alan. Steve.
The Give Yourself an Uppercut podcast with Scotty, Ben and Steve.
It's time to thank our wonderful sponsors, Ian, Lynn and the crew at the Butcher Shop, Dixon and Kayleen. Benny, I know you've been sick as a dog for the last couple of weeks with the flu. Have you been getting into the butcher shop or have you been just stuck at home?
No, I was in there last week and I tried something new, man.
What'd you have?
Lamb.
Was it the big lamb shanks, the mustard crusted lamb shanks? Have you seen these things?
Just little lamb choppy things.
Okay. Cool.
Lamb chops, I think.
Straight lamb chops.
Funny about that.
Well, everything else has a fancy name.
Well, it's true. No, two new things. I went in there the other day and I thought...
Actually, I got a lamb torpedo as well. Sorry,
nice. They're good. I thought they'd boned out a lamb shank. This thing was frigging huge. And they've gone, no, we just got these huge lamb shanks.
Payos has boned a few skanks. So. Too obvious. Sorry.
Hey. Sorry. Shanks.
Sorry.
Not skanks. Sorry. So, the mustard-crusted lamb shanks. So, these lamb shanks, they look like something out of the Flintstones. They're massive. Yep. Absolutely massive with a mustard crusting around them. You put them in the oven and they are so good. And the chicken margaritas that they came up with last week. Very, very tasty. Very, very tasty.
Are they? There's some photos of them.
Mate, there's photos on the Butcher Shop Facebook page. You can go and check them out. But better still, just get into Dixon and Kayleen and go and see the team and get some of it because it is, hands down, Canberra's best meat and wonderful sponsors of this show. So, Benny, we've got to get you in there. Get one of them mustard-crusted lamb shanks and you'll kill whoever you're fighting next.
So I just plenty go of protein. In, ask for a crusty lamb.
Crusted, skank. Mustard, crusted lamb shank.
Give me, I need a crusty skank.
No, that's what Steve will go in and ask for. The Butcher Shop, Dixon and Kayleen, where the quality is remembered long after the price is forgotten.
You're listening to the Give Yourself an Uppercut podcast.
With Scotty Masters,
Ben the Governor Edwards,
and Steve Payos.
Damn right you're listening to the best podcast, especially in Queanbeyan.
But one Ben Posket.
It's the best.
The Ben Pods, what?
Yes, and the best podcast in Canberra award has now gone to someone else.
We still got Queanbeyan though,
man. Oh, please. That is one of my absolute best. That's brilliant. We are dead set the best podcast in the region. There's nothing about that.
On to, there is no more serious subject, but basically you got Jon Snowd and you saw the Red Witch.
Well, yeah, I didn't see the Red Witch. I saw a 6'2" anaesthetist called Ross is who I saw. But,
in a big white cape with a big white light behind.
Long story short, I'm not doing my usual silliness this week. I wanted to relay something that's happened to me over the last few weeks. But this is a story that's about 2 years old because it's no secret I've battled with my weight my whole life. Benny, what do you call it, the fittest fat guy in the room? At points in my life, I've been that. At other points, I've not been bloody fit, and it's all due to injuries I suffered doing football. And as you'll attest to, Benny, a couple of years ago, I came to you. I said, I want to try and get fit again. I want you to train me. I think, what did I last? 2 sessions before I broke down in a screaming heap?
Yeah.
And I was out of action for 3 months, just the way my back and shoulder is. So
you did have a broken back,
and broken neck
from a spear tackle.
Yeah, so yeah. I've got a lot of injuries.
C1 for that matter,
and I can't
Rodney
train.
Howe.
Yeah, for that matter. Yeah, I can't train like normal people. So exercise for me is non-existent. And you can only hardcore diet so much. So I looked into having gastric sleeve surgery about 2 years ago, which is where they remove a portion of your stomach so your meals are smaller, and it's been really successful for a lot of people, and you lose a lot of weight. And so 2 years ago, I thought, yep, all right, I'm going to do it. But my private health at the time wasn't enough, so I had to up that and wait another 12 months. So that was all cleared, ready to go around the start of this year, but I had the honeymoon coming up, and I thought, I'll wait till that's done. I'll come back, and we'll get the job done. So, when we took a break 2 weeks ago, I went into a hospital on August 7 to have the surgery, and everything was going well. I'd lost a stack of weight on the pre-op diet.
A stack of weight before that on the keto diet.
So, yeah, lost about 30 kilos over the last 12 months, but then plateaued and couldn't lose any more again, which is why I decided to do it. But, yeah, got into the surgery and had all the pre-op stuff, which was fine, and I remember getting up onto the operating table, and next thing, I wake up in ICU about 4 hours later with tubes coming out of me everywhere. I died on the table. They gave me the anesthetic, and I had a severe anaphylaxis reaction to the anesthetic, and it stopped my heart. It essentially pulled the plug out of my heart. So while they class it as a cardiac arrest, it wasn't a heart attack. The heart just instantly stopped.
So it was anaphylactic with the heart.
Yeah, yeah.
So your throat would have started to close up.
All of that stuff. So I was intubated and everything. But essentially within 15 seconds of being given the anesthetic for the surgery, my BP went from 120 over 80 down to 38 over 20, and then my heart stopped within 15 seconds. So they hit...
Like a whole minute.
I was out for 70 seconds. I was out. So they hit the emergency button, and the team, who were absolutely fantastic, that were in there, about 15 people in the surgery when they hit the emergency button. And my anaesthetist is a pretty big dude, Ross. He'd probably about 120 kegs and 6'2", and he jumped on top of me and started doing CPR. And in that process, he broke three of my ribs and tore all the intercostal muscles between those ribs that were broken.
He was trying to get that heart going.
And apparently, like, he was going so hard that my ass was lifting off the table and smashing into the floor. So I had a bruised tailbone at the end of it too. So that's the story they told you. Yeah, that's the story, yeah. Maybe I was taken to the AMC and thrown around. I don't know. Who knows? Something happened. But when I woke up, they went, "Where's the pain?" And, like, obviously it was chest and it was my butt. And, so over the next 2 days, I spent 2 days in ICU at the National Capital Private Hospital, and big shout-out to the crew there. They were bloody amazing. But, it was pretty lucky. And I saw a stat the other day. They say, you know, you see on TV whenever they do CPR, and, you know, in movies, and that's always successful. But in the true matter, it's about 5% of times CPR is used that it's actually successful. But the CPR didn't get me going. They had to inject me twice with adrenaline, and that's what got me going. So... I went to the other side, but there was no other side. It was just, I don't remember a thing. I just remember waking up with tubes coming out of me everywhere, including my dick, which is the one that's... When I woke up and felt that, and I went, something hasn't gone right here.
Yeah.
Because why is that there? Because that's not part of it. So at the moment, I'm undergoing a bunch of tests so they can work out which drug I had the reaction to.
There's four drugs that went into you.
That were used to knock me out, and they reckon they know which one it is, so I've got to go and have an allergy test. I've seen the cardiologist. The heart's perfect. They've gone, there's no damage to the heart. There's no fat deposits in your heart. No, nothing. Your heart's sweet. So that's all good. So they'll work out which one it was, and then I'm going to go back at the end of October and try for round two of this. So these might be prophetic words in the future if I die again and don't come back, but I'm sure everything will be fine because they reckon it'll be the safest operating theatre in Australia that day, given what happened to me before.
They'll have a heap of people.
You're good. They'll have everything in there that brought me back, and I'll be used a different cocktail of drugs no matter what. Like, they will use none of the same drugs they gave me last time.
And you're doing you got the allergic test coming up.
That's September. You've got to wait about 6 weeks after the initial surgery so all the traces of the original drugs leave you system. They just inject it just under the surface of your skin, and you should react to it like bubble up blister.
Yeah.
And so I'll probably end up wearing a medic bracelet my whole life, and I'll probably, when I find out what it is, I'm definitely getting it tattooed on my chest going, don't give me this or it'll kill me. Yeah,
that's horrible. So, my mum had an allergic reaction similar to that.
It's common. A lot of people do, but I'm the first case in 20 years for my bariatric surgeon where he's ever had someone die on the table. He's never had that happen
before. Instant heart stop.
Who knew? Like,
well, we're glad you're here, mate.
Well, and I was the, it's funny, I was the only one before the surgery saying to all my friends, oh, I'm a bit worried. You'll be fine, man. Yeah, you'll
it's
be
2017,
fine.
Man.
No, yeah, you'll be sweet. Yeah. Don't worry. And lo and behold, look what happens. But yeah.
How nervous are you going to be for the next one? Jeez.
I reckon, Benny, there's a good chance I'll be shitting bricks. But yeah. I'm sure everything will be looked after and we'll go from there.
So you got to do, how long were you on the liquid diet for before it?
About two and a half weeks last time. Yeah. I only got to do 10 days this time because the whole idea behind that liquid diet they put you on before you go in is to shrink your liver because they need to lift your liver out of the way to get to your stomach to do it. So hopefully all things going well this time in 12 months, I'm going to look like a very different fella.
And, Rooster.
Yeah, who knows?
But just for all the listeners out there as well, make no mistake about it. Like these type of things are extremely serious. And I remember it's such a big thing and that's why we're so proud of you as well, mate. But the thing as well I'll never forget is when you let Benny and I know about what happened. And I remember
I was still pretty high then. I texted you from ICU and I was still on ketamine at the time. So we picked up on that.
I love you, boys.
Cloud 89. The Airbus A3 Masters was on his way. But you cannot substitute that feeling of shock you get when you read something like that. You see that, you go, what the fuck?
Well, think about my bloody poor wife. Like she came with me to the
absolutely.
Hospital.
Absolutely, the people who are closer to you than us. I mean, I remember reading that, just going, "Oh my!"
Even though you still, even this day and age, like with how advanced medicine is, surgery, you'll be right. You know, most of the time it's all good. But
There were three other people.
So much risk, man.
There were three other people that went through the surgery after me that day with the same drugs, and all went through, no dramas. They were fine. They were downstairs while I was upstairs in ICU, but. Yeah, the poor wife, she was there with me till I went to theatre and they said, oh, it'll be about 4 hours before he's coming out of recovery and out of the anaesthetic. So she went back to work and then she was going to come back. 50 minutes after she'd left, they called her and went, you need to come back because he's died. We've brought him back.
Oh.
But then they said to her, and this is what really got to her, they went, there's a chance that he's got brain damage because he was without oxygen for nearly a minute and a half.
Yeah.
Thankfully, and you can start the jokes now, but everything seems okay. But you know, the same level of retardation I had pre-surgery is 50% present now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It is the one
There's
final
been no
thing.
Improvement, unfortunately.
And here's the one final thing, and this is not made to embellish the story. Like that whole story is dead set true, word for word. None of it's made up. As we were driving into National Capital Private Hospital on the Monday morning at about 6:30, Sherry's driving me along in her car, and she's got an iPod and like 6,000 songs on it or whatever, and it's always just on random in her car. Anything can come up. And we're driving in. We turned into the driveway of the hospital, and Kickstart My Heart by Motley Crue came on, and we both looked at each other and laughed. I told her I'd delete that off the fucking iPod. That is not going to be on when we go back next time. It ain't going to happen.
It's very prophetic.
So, unbelievable.
Yeah. So there you go. So that's what happened. And hopefully in a couple of weeks or a couple of months, I'll go back in and see how we go.
That's right. Touch wood, everything's okay, mate. But it's a really... It's a great story now, isn't it? But at the time, it was quite shocking for all of us when you hear it, when you're involved. And,
full credit to you to being able to look at it the way you look at it, too. A lot of people, it's obviously a life-changing experience.
You were probably a little bit philosophical the first couple of days, though.
The Monday night after the anaesthetist came back up to ICU and sort of gave me a blow-by-blow of what happened. Oh. And like, his first words were, you aged me 10 years in 3 minutes this morning, mate. And he told me, then I rang my mum from ICU, and as soon as I heard mum's voice, I lost my shit. Yeah. So for about 5 to 10 minutes, I was a blabbering mess, but I've been pretty good since. So.
But
full credit to you.
It's cliche. It does really make you look at shit a lot differently.
Differently, doesn't it?
It really, really
does.
You get
a different view on everything. And, mate, it's some story, isn't it?
Scary stuff.
That wasn't funny, but there you go. There's my little story from the last couple of weeks.
I prefer that to a top four. I'm just too soon. Too soon.
Yeah. You.
I love
Top
you.
Top 5 Scotty Masters reactions when he finished. We've got next week's ready.
You're listening to the Give Yourself an Uppercut podcast. Thanks to The Butcher Shop, Dixon and Kayleen. And now, with the Macedonian love god, it's time for the vast planet of athletic endeavour.
Australia won the toss and they're going to bowl.
Scoring brilliant goals.
Nice hole in one. PGA Tour.
Take it away, Stevie.
Thanks very much, boys. The world of sport really heating up in Australia now as it does at this time of year, normally moving into the final series time for both the NRL and AFL. Firstly, AFL has just finalised its top eight. Now they move into a finals period. It all starts on Thursday week, Adelaide hosting GWS in the first versus fourth clash. And then you've got Geelong coming up against Richmond, second versus third. The Bombers going to Sydney for the sixth versus seventh match. And then you've got Port Adelaide hosting West Coast. The question I have for you boys, and this is a thing that I find quite strange, the codes still have their wars and still have their tit for tat. The AFL have gone into a process now where what they're doing is they're having a full week off now before they get into their finals. What's your thoughts on this, boys? I think it loses a massive amount of momentum because the NRL had a pretty crazy round last weekend again, which I'll go into in a second. They have all the games this week to finalise what happens with the top eight in the final series, and the AFL just have a break now. And I just don't understand why. I mean, there's been some great footy. I mean, I watch AFL a fair bit. I do like it. Love the Bombers, and you know, good to see us back in the eight. But for now, you're hungry for that finals game. You're hungry to actually watch what's going to happen here. And now they're just having a week off. I think they're losing a lot of momentum, and I don't know why they put their season.
Do you think the thought process is just to have a higher level of finals footy so everyone's all 100% recovered?
To give blokes with niggling injuries and stuff. What a great podcast
what
this
were we
is.
Saying? Yeah, not as good as mine before, was it? The bet, whatever. Oh, dear. But yeah, I just got a problem with it because there's talk that they need that extra bye throughout the season and that sort of thing. But why don't you plan your season better then so that everyone's had their bye in the last couple of weeks
like before the NRL season? Do.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, I just don't see the point in them doing it this way. You lose the momentum. What it does do is it couples up the grand finals together. So you have the AFL grand final on the same weekend as the NRL grand final on that October long weekend.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I just don't see the point of this. You're a footy fan right now. Like, I can't wait to watch the Bombers go around. We got dusted against Sydney last time in the last 4 minutes.
Yep.
You know, after having a 3.5 goal lead. I mean, it was unheard of. So if the boys aren't motivated to go and take them on right now and straight away, and as a fan, you want to see that. So I don't quite understand that from the AFL's perspective. In the NRL, it was a crazy round of games. Obviously, I go for Manly, so I'll talk about them first. But the last 10 minutes of that game versus the Warriors was something absolutely crazy. I've never seen anything like it. Field goals, missed field goals, drop balls off kickoffs. Yeah, it was just a crazy end to the season. Manly were down 21-14 with not long to go. Got back into the game 21-all. Took it to Golden Point, and in the process, unfortunately, ended the Raiders' season
who
beat your boys on Friday night, Scotty. But it's been a nice little resurgence, I think, from the Knights. They've shown some signs that you might have a decent season next year.
Yeah, we've got some decent players coming next year, and Nathan Brown saying we've got enough money to buy another three really good players yet. So if he can go out and get, we needed one really experienced good front row, and there's talk Adam Blair's going to come to the club.
Yep.
I would have rather James Graham, to be honest.
Yes,
but,
yep.
Who knows? Next year's got to be better. I mean, 3 years on the trot for the wooden spoon.
Is James Graham off contract, is he?
Yeah, well, the whole issue at the Bulldogs is you've got Aaron Woods coming in, and you've also got Kieran Foran coming in. Plus, the Bulldogs operated on the fact they thought the salary cap was going to be about $700,000 more than what it is.
Yep.
So now they're trying to offload players to fit under the cap for next year, which has finally
James
been announced.
One of the last guys I'd be getting rid of.
Yeah, well,
I'd be hanging
James
on to Graham
Graham's a
Woods.
Much better bloody player than Aaron Woods. Aaron Woods is a soft muppet. He's got no mongrel in him. He's got mongrel when they're on top and they're winning. And he's a big unit.
He's
a fading force,
though, I think, Woods. I mean, he had those big raps a couple of years ago in Origin. He was one of the first pick. But now he's really faded away, I think.
Yeah.
And he certainly probably hasn't helped in that he's been at the Tigers, who have been struggling.
Maybe moving to a new club will give him a spark like it does to players. Like, look at Aku Uarte this year for you guys, mate.
Absolutely.
He's been sensational.
He's been
for
superb.
You guys.
That's exactly right.
At the Knights, he was injured and he was stale and he needed a change.
Almost like he didn't want to be there, did he?
There's a bit of that going on too, I think.
That's right. Yeah. So Raiders season's over. Very, very disappointing. We talked about this a few weeks ago. Where I still feel the Raiders have had the most disappointing season after being where they were last year.
Talk about momentum.
I've got to say, Ricky Stewart was on NRL 360 on, when was it, Monday night, and he was quite open and basically blamed it on the players and himself, and he said, this is our fault. He said, I tried to get into them this year that the wins wouldn't come as easy this year for us, and they didn't.
Yep.
And I think they lost six games by less than 6 points.
Yeah,
too.
That's
so
right.
It could have been a very different season for them if those
but you
games
were
on their way.
Saturday night.
He was there. He was a very good bloke. So curious to see how the Raiders come out of this. The top eight picture not completely closed now, which is good in the NRL.
St. George and the Bulldogs game can sway it, can't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. So the way it is at the moment, you've got Penrith in sixth, you've got North Queensland in seventh, and you've got Manly in eighth. Manly in eighth hosts Penrith in sixth.
Yeah.
Then you've got North Queensland who host the Broncos, who I think you'd expect to win.
Yeah.
And then you've also got St. George playing the Bulldogs with a chance. St. George have the best best differential by about 30 points minimum on all the teams.
The Storm will be they're the favourites.
So Manly lose, Storm will go up, St. George will go up. If St. George win, but Manly win.
But Penrith will drop out. Yeah. That's right, because Manly will stay in and then Penrith will go out.
Yeah.
And then you've got the Cowboys as well, who I think you'd expect them to lose to Brisbane. So,
you would think so.
But it is a Queensland derby to end the season. The only thing that's for sure, Melbourne Storm, minor premiers, and they've really crapped it in this year. They've been fantastic. I think there's probably only three teams that can win it this year, and that, in my mind, is the top three, the Roosters, the Broncos, and Melbourne. I mean, if Cronulla
that's like the three shittiest teams in the NRL when you don't follow those teams. Like, they are the three most hated teams.
Yes, exactly right. Isn't it hard to see them who are the ones that are right at the top?
I won't even watch that if it's like, maybe I'll watch the Roosters. If it's a Brisbane-Melbourne one, there is no chance I'll watch that game.
Look, what else are you going to be doing, man?
I'll do anything else but watch that game.
NRL Grand Final, man.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's awesome. It is a tough game, though. I agree with you, Scotty. Yeah. Melbourne and Brisbane isn't. I mean, they're two teams that I don't like. I mean,
crowd will be bloody.
No one likes Manly, but at the same time, they're not two teams that I'm real.
The people love them or hate them, so the crowd's going to be awesome.
Well, you'd expect it, but how is an interstate Grand Final going to go? When was the last time it was an interstate Grand Final?
Wasn't that long. It's been a couple.
There's been a few.
But
yeah, well, I guess Brisbane and North Queensland a few years ago. That was a cracker. You had Melbourne and Brisbane back in 2006.
Yeah.
So there has been
interstate, meaning not New South Wales.
That's right, yeah. And Melbourne have been.
If the Roosters got there, as much as I hate them, I'd probably watch it just to see if Mitchell Pearce actually put in at club level in a big game as opposed to what happens at Origin. Honestly, I'd probably watch it for that just to see how he copes.
Which is flopping all over the place. So we'll see how it all ends up with the NRL.
Flopping.
Looking at you then, mate. Yeah, so we'll see how the NRL positions itself, and we'll talk about that in the coming weeks. A couple of big things that involve our Australian national teams. Past weekend, the Wallabies showed something that I think everybody was yearning
some
for.
Some improvement.
Was some improvement and some competitiveness. They actually went out there, should have won the game. Yeah. The All Blacks, being the All Blacks, stole it back off us twice in the last 10 minutes with late tries. They are an unbelievable outfit. But you also saw, speaking of pressure there, you see what a champion team does when they're really put under the blowtorch. They come up with two magnificent tries in the last 10 minutes to steal the game from us, but we almost pinched it back through Kirtley Beale's late try as well. So for us, it's fantastic to see that we actually showed some fight. Bledisloe's gone again, but hey, if you can take that sort of form into the rest of the Tri Nations, perform against South Africa, who's going to be our toughest opponent remaining in, it's not the Tri Nations anymore, the Rugby Championship, take that into a European tour and then build towards a World Cup in a few years' time, that'd be really good. So that was good to see the Wallabies actually show some competitiveness.
Yep.
Australia play their final two World Cup qualifiers in the group stage. First one
Japan.
Coming up. That's correct. Yep. First one coming up this Thursday night away in Japan, and then following that game is at home against Thailand. Now, the biggest thing for the game against Japan is if we can get a draw or get a win, effectively we'll be through in my mind, because I do think we beat Thailand at home.
Oh, you think so? Tuesday. But Japanese are a hard task, especially in Japan, aren't
100%,
they?
100%, Scott, 100%. The way that the fixture list is, though, is that Japan then plays Saudi Arabia in the final game, so they'll take points off each other.
Yep.
So provided we've taken something off Japan, we'll be in a position where if we beat Thailand, we'll go through automatically. If we lose against Japan, though, then we need results to go our way, even if we beat Thailand. Mm. And then we're going to be in a bit of trouble, I think, because then we go into a qualifying playoff against the other team that came third in the Asian qualifying group, which looks like it's going to be someone like Iran or Uzbekistan, even South Korea, and they're very tough. Then from there, we've got to go and play the Central American team. So it's going to be...
The Thai rugby team?
No. Soccer.
I thought it was about rugby. Like, what? Thailand's got a rugby team? Is there drug testing? Are they all expats?
All the Muay Thai cast offs.
I'm like, what's going on
your
there?
Best. Oh, dear me. So, yeah, we'll see how the soccer really goes. I think they're in big trouble if they don't qualify automatically. I think there's going to be a real issue there.
Yep.
And some great news is that it looks like the Matildas are going to have a packed house for their game, which is coming up this week as well. So women's football is really growing at the moment, which is great. Two last things I wanted to finish off with. One of them was ask a question of you guys about the fight. What I will say, though, is the US Open has started as well this week, the tennis. So some mixed results this morning.
Yep.
Probably not mixed in Bernard Tomic's case. He's gone out already.
And now he's dropped, so he doesn't get auto selection into major tournaments anymore because he's 46 in the world
out. So he had a loss this morning. There was a big win, though, for Jordan Thompson, who beat Jack Sock, the 13th seed American. So that was fantastic for him.
An Aussie kid who's not a flog.
Yeah, not
very
bad.
Nice.
Yeah, Kokkinakis lost, unfortunately, this morning. But two players players who did really well recently. Nick Kyrgios, one of our favorites.
Did he beat Rafa?
He did, yeah. Yes, yeah, that's right. Yeah, at the Masters event a few weeks ago. So what he did was he made the final of the Masters Series event, lost to Dimitrov, fantastic player, Grigor Dimitrov, but it showed some sign of maturity. Let's see where it goes from here. I'm not prepared to preempt anything, knowing Nick Kyrgios.
He's the John Jones of tennis.
In a way, that's right. So let's see what happens with him there. Dario Gavrilova also won a WTA event last week as well, so there's some promising signs there. Last thing on the fight I wanted to ask you, boys, Benny mentioned it in his Biffo-rama. Only 14,500 people filled out the T-Mobile Arena. They reckon there was up to 5,000 spare seats. Yeah, I know a lady who went over there.
It's because it was so dear.
Yes.
What I wanted to ask
was is how much damage does this do to these type of sports when you've got three quarters of an arena full for the fight of the century because they've outpriced themselves in the market? It is silly in my mind, and it would have been much better as a spectacle. This lady bought tickets on the morning of the fight for $1,000, which I thought that is pretty good, noting that it was all quoted. That they're going to be $3,000 minimum.
I mean, on TV, you didn't see it because the camera angles.
Oh, I saw the seating arrangement, and it sounds like a lot, but it really, the seats that were available were very spread out all over the place. So it wasn't hard to make the place look
But is that does this do damage to the sport, though, when you're pricing it away from the regular fans? Boxing's always been a sport for the blue-collar man and woman. So why is it we're in a position now where you can't even get a ticket to one of these events if you wanted to?
They've got to try and recoup some of the costs of the fighters, mate.
But if you've got such a discrepancy, like 3,000 for a minimum and 100 grand for ringside, why don't you make J-Lo pay 200 grand because you can afford it, or whoever's paying for the comp tickets for afford it, and make the bleacher seats $100?
They'd probably make more money if they just dropped the price by everything by 30%.
Put it in an arena that holds 50,000, like the Horn fight at bloody Suncorp.
And get everyone in there, though.
50,000 people in there at a half price. You'd have three times the amount of people.
I just think
blue collar for the next generation. But they kids would be loving it.
Well, didn't they have to do this fight in Vegas because they're the only ones that had authorized it? Is that the reason it was in Vegas?
No. Nevada's any athletic commission probably would have licensed it based on the pure revenue that the state would
make. Right, Floyd lives down there as
Floyd lives in Vegas, but Connor's he's made Vegas a lot of money over the last 4 years.
Fair point. I did hear that too, though, Scotty. Like I do know, I see where you're coming from on that. But look, I was disappointed by that. I thought if you're going to have these events,
I agree.
What are you going to take away from now? I mean, I hope that the Triple G fight is the one that gets a full house because I can't wait for that. That's going to be
the tickets won't be anywhere near that
contest. That's right, but it's sad that it takes away from what should be, a massive spectacle. Yeah. But we'll see how it all ends up.
Well, I know people that went to the Jeff Horn fight and they got taken on the corporate dime. So a local bloke here and the company he deals with a lot had ringside seats.
Mm-hmm.
And I know he didn't have to pay for them, but those ringside seats to the Horn fight were about $6,000 or $7,000.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and you were sitting on garden chairs in the middle of Suncorp Stadium. He didn't pay for them. He never would have gone without that money, but everyone else, like about 10 rows back, you get a seat for $300-$400. At something like that, you don't mind paying that for an event like that. World title fight. Yeah, definitely.
Unbelievable. Yep, there you go.
Yeah, interesting.
So that's
stuff.
It, boys. The vast.
No, it's no nothing, mate. You're a machine. You're a rain man.
It's all in the brain, mate. All in the brain. Impressed. Yeah, plenty going on, though, and I'd love to talk about it forever, but.
See what happens when you don't get punched in the head for a living, Benny.
Good thanks.
Thanks to the Butcher Shop, Dixon and Kayleen.
You've downloaded the Give Yourself an Uppercut podcast
with Scotty Masters and Ben the Governor Edwards.
God bless the interwebs.
Need advice?
You've come to the wrong place. But Scotty and Ben will have a crack at your conundrum anyway. It's listener question time.
And this time around, Joshy Watson on Facebook says, who do you guys think should be next for Connor? Now, we all know part of the deal Dana had struck with Connor for being able to go and fight Floyd that was that his next fight had to be UFC. We know that. So forget boxing, forget everything else.
No, I think Connor wanted that
anyway. It's got to be UFC. So, Benny, your thoughts on this and then Stevie?
The only two names that really come to mind is Nurmagomedov and Diaz.
He's the bear wrestler.
Yeah, but with... let's call him Nurmi. That's what his dad calls him. No one's got time for 45 syllables. Yeah. Nurmi, he pulls out a morph. He's been offered lightweight fights lately now. He hasn't made it. Didn't make weight last time.
Yep.
He is a pull-out merchant, as Connor said.
And so, an injury merchant too.
Absolutely. I think he's just one of those guys that just trains crazy hard. And if he can get to the cage, he's a beast. But he trains so hard that him getting there, same as Velasquez.
Yeah.
It's a 50-50 shot. I reckon the most logical fight would be Nate Diaz 3 at lightweight and then retire, because that's going to – Nate Diaz 2 broke the UFC pay-per-view record.
Surely he's got to come back and defend one of his belts. Surely.
Yeah, well, maybe for the lightweight title.
Yeah.
Give it to Nate. That's the biggest pay-per-view. They just gave Dan Henderson a shot against Michael Bisping for the middleweight title.
Yeah.
It's what the fans want to see. And then retire, because there's nothing left to do.
He doesn't need to do it.
Well, there's nothing left to do.
Well, I thought that was a good question, and more so for what is next as opposed to who is next. I think Conor definitely has to go back to the UFC, in my opinion.
He wanted to anyway.
Yeah. Maybe even two fights, because just to keep the ball rolling with image.
Go back and punch Aldo's fucking head in. Like, seriously.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to give him another chance.
No, you wouldn't. Fair enough.
Well, if you're McGregor, you wouldn't. That's right. But I think it's a case where, in my mind, he's got to go and do probably two more just to keep the revenue, keep rolling on for him. If he wants to remain as that big celebrity status fighter, that staying relevant in everyone's mind, he's got to stay active.
Does he want to go to WWE? Does he want to go to movies?
No, you heard what he said about the WWE guys. Yeah. They're all a bunch of messed up pussies.
Yeah. But
he's got his finger in a lot of pies.
So why do you think he retires, though? Benny, like, why do you think he retires?
Because his whole thing was get in, get rich, and get out. You've made more money than any UFC fighter ever, times 20.
Yeah.
Why risk brain damage? He's got a kid now.
Yeah.
You know, you're
set
for life.
So you think it'll be a case of he'll just fight a couple of more times and go? Yeah. I thought if he wants more lucrative stuff, he's going to have to fight a couple of more times in the UFC, and then from there he can take his pick as a retirement.
He's never going to get any bigger than what he is.
Yeah, there's no way he'll make more money.
Even if he beats Nate Diaz in a third fight, okay, he's at the zenith of sport, and he's still there. You know what I mean? He's get in, get rich, and get out. He said that from day one. And keeping in mind that the first Irishman, I can't remember his name, but the first Irishman to fight in the UFC was mates with Conor. He's got some brain problems right now just for staying in the cage too long.
Right.
Yeah. So Conor's had first-hand experience with, you know, hanging around too long when he shouldn't be there. So especially he's got a kid now.
So he's made it to that point now, just done so much.
Did you see that interview with his mum the other day? And they're asking, you know, how do you feel now, mum? Oh, yeah, no, I'm really happy. And now I get to spend some of his money. And he's just gone, settle down, ma.
They're pretty tight-knit. His dad's actually a really cool guy. I've seen his dad interviewed a bunch of times now.
Yeah.
He's a really cool dude.
See, that's interesting you say that, man. It's good to hear that from – I would have thought he would have kept going for a little bit longer. But is there any point? Money-wise.
But that's the thing. Not money-wise. And
if it changes
your mentality when you've got a family, man. That's all I've heard.
When he gets shares in the UFC too, he's going to be making money hand over fist forever.
He's already got some pretty good investments going on.
Yeah, I guess it depends. Because someone who's big on that, for example, is LeBron James. And that's why they reckon LeBron is going to look to move from the Cavs at the end of next season.
To the Lakers.
Yeah. Because LA, he's got big investments in production companies and Hollywood. And he basically wants to go and make movies, make TV shows.
Well, he was great in Trainwreck, the Amy Schumer movie. He was like, he just didn't look like a sports guy who'd been cast in a movie. He played himself.
Yeah.
But he had to actually act in it, and he was quite good. He
naturally
was quite
talented.
Funny in it.
That's
He was.
Yeah.
He was very funny.
I guess, if you've got those interests, that will lead him down that path and he'll be okay.
Because, how easy would it be to get yourself up for a fight camp and when you know you've already got, 100
Well, that's
the
old saying
in
boxing,
thing, isn't it?
It's not easy to get up and run in the morning when you're wearing silk underwear.
There you go. Nice work. All right, Josh, I hope that answered your question. Time for song two on the podcast this week. And, of course, a shock this year with the passing of Chris Cornell from Soundgarden. This chick and her band, Lizzie Hale from Hailstorm, her brother's the drummer and a bunch of other guys, they love tipping their hat to the music that got them into rock and roll. So they've done a bunch of covers. This is off their third EP of famous covers. They've covered Skid Row, they've covered Guns N' Roses, Heart, all sorts of stuff. And they've done a cover of Fell on Black Days by Soundgarden, and this chick's voice is amazing. So check this out. It's really cool. Hailstorm, Fell on Black Days on the Give Yourself an Uppercut podcast, thanks to The Butcher Shop. Whatsoever I feel has come.
That was Fell on Black Days by Hailstorm.
How good was that?
That was fantastic.
It's pretty impressive. Another great cover, yeah. She can sing. And she's red hot too.
Is she?
Oh, red hot and can sing. Oh,
I'll tell you who is. That'll be so hard. Who is a hot singer for a metal chick is Arch Enemy.
Oh, yes.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. I found her the other day. Yeah. Jesus Christ.
Did you?
Oh, God.
Was she one of the ones you swiped right? You are you sleeping in the street after the Mayweather fight?
Super like.
Oh, dearie me.
What time is it now?
It's uppercut time, boys.
All right. Who
and,
we got?
Well, Benny, you and I agreed on this one. Game of Thrones. Sensational. Last couple of seasons have all been great. The first two seasons were good. Got a little bit dirgy through 3 and 4, but the last couple have been amazing. Awesome. And, of course, the final season has been split over what was supposed to be 2 years. Well, it's now looking like it might be 3 years. The producers came out and said after the finale on Monday night that the next episode, so the final six episodes, which are all reported to be movie length, may not come out till like November 2018 or early 2019.
We've got to wait for the actual winter.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they've got to push it back for shooting and all that sort of stuff.
So, and they film all over the world too.
I mean, I guess it's hard because they've got to condense everything from all the novels and get it into the TV show.
She's from a book.
What?
Game of Thrones from a book?
Yes, mate. Yeah, it's from a bunch of books. A bunch of books written by a big fella called George R.R. Martin.
You're kidding me.
A Song of Fire and Ice is the overarching title of them.
The what?
Dude, they're all like this thick. They're all huge.
Oh, am I the only person who's not seen Game of Thrones? I must be.
There's a few douchebags on Facebook that go. I'm in the 1% that hasn't seen it.
Oh, cheers, mate. I've not seen a thing. I've heard that much about it.
People you need to watch it, dude. You'd like it, I reckon. Well, that's there's plenty of boobs. There's plenty of violence.
Oh, you love the first couple of seasons. Just hammer time.
This. So my dad, Jim, he's for years and years and years, he's like, you're giving it to my brother. And, what's all these games for drones crap you boys watch? He's dead set getting stuck into everyone for watching it. Come home one day, set him up with like Netflix or I think it's on Netflix, maybe not.
Yeah.
I'll set him up with water, all that sort of stuff. And next minute he's sitting there watching it on his iPad, waiting for it now. Oh, you are a sellout, my friend. Yeah. After all that, he's loving it.
It's awesome.
Waiting for it. And go,
it's rooting, fighting, betrayal. All these
to pay it out, Dad, and here you are, mate, loving it.
Yeah. Good on you. I mean, the producers and the showrunners have done such a great job. There's no doubt about it.
It's insane. If you look at the production difference from season one to now. It's insane. Their budget's gone up by like 100 times.
Is that good?
Yeah, it's so well done. And just the way the dragons this season, the way they made the dragons
but
look.
The cinema photography as
cinematography,
well.
Cinematography.
We're on fire. This is the podcast.
The Rippers today.
I'm the one that could have almost had brain damage. Come on.
We're still the pest podcaster here.
So, I mean, as much as they've provided us with a wonderful show, if we've got to wait to 2018, Benny, end of 2018, start of 2019, I think that deserves an uppercut.
So 100%.
Flex up, son.
Ready, cut.
Ready, and...
Boy!
Yeah, no, it'll be 2019.
Yeah, that's crazy.
No more episodes after that one.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable. Isn't it? Not happy, Jan.
Oh, well, there you go.
So there's 7 movie-length episodes left.
Yeah, that's what they're saying. Yeah, they'll all be sort of an hour and a half long.
And have they just done that because of Netflix and all that's come along where there's less restrictions on advertising and all that sort of thing?
I think it's
become so popular that people want to see so much of it. And well, they got to condense like 8 books into.
Yeah, and they met with George R.R. Martin because the final, like the TV show has surpassed where the books are up to now.
But it's also taken a few different turns as well.
Yeah, but they met with him and basically got the major plot points he was going to incorporate into the books.
In case he did it.
In case he has a hardy.
Did a Scotty.
Yeah, and has an anaphylactic reaction, dies on the table and doesn't come back. But so they know where it was supposed to go.
Yeah.
And I think because of all that info, they've just gone, let's do the long one. So,
This season's been the best, though. Oh, everything was such a long time coming, I reckon.
Yeah.
That was pure. That was
just like Jon Snow.
Just pure.
And did you say it's
a long time coming? What was your Gret? Season 4? It's been 3 seasons before he got one away. Almost like you.
What's Jon? Who's Jon Snow?
He's Jon Sand, actually. Well, he just rooted his arnie. Spoiler alert.
Oh, is that what all the... Okay, yeah.
But he's Jon Sand, but he's not. He's a Targaryen.
Yeah, anyway. That's right. Anyway, long story short.
Your little finger. All right.
How good! I was screaming at the TV when that happened. That
I knew the
Tissers
were playing him. I knew it, man. Suck shit.
I said that too.
No, Dickhead got his throat slit.
This is Stevie.
The look
Stevie, the look on your face right now is the look Ben gives us when you talk soccer.
Yeah.
The
Pride Rugby team.
What's coming up next week, Benny? Yeah. What will we be looking at? Triple G?
Triple G, Canelo.
Yep.
And
what's next for Johnny Bones will be...
Yeah, we'll talk on that. If the Mayweather-McGregor thing wasn't so big, I would have touched on that this week, but I'll definitely...
Touch on that next week, because we have to. We've got to talk about that.
Yeah, what's going on?
It's
got to be associated.
Has Duke Diddy stopped crying yet?
No.
No, the fact that these two biggest idols are on the pin and won't get to fight each other.
Yeah, Brock and
it's all right, Brock, Duke. Yeah, Brock and Brock and
Heedley,
John.
Oh, when John Jones called him out, Duke nearly had a heart attack. He was so happy.
Yeah. Ain't gonna happen. As I said on Facebook, they gotta go to Risen. They can fight over the syringe. Yeah. That's what they can
go
fight
to Japan
over.
And just gas up.
Yeah.
See, that you'd pay to watch.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. If they were juiced to the
mate,
action.
If they put Gabby Garcia on, who's juiced the eyeballs to fight a granny. They have no problem putting John Jones and Brock Lesnar on.
Yep.
All right. Well, that's episode 9. Thanks to the Butcher Shop. All done and dusted. I'll say get a big black dog up, yeah?
I'll say see you next Thursday. Don't mess yours up, Payos.
What's my line again?
All right.
In the annals of history...
There has been some mighty trios. Alvin and the Chipmunks, Harry, Ron and Hermione, and the Bee Gees.
Well, sure, there's only one of them now, but you get the drift.
And now, from a small bedroom in Queanbeyan,
these three men will try and make sense of the world with their words. And if words fail them, there's always this.
Ben Edwards with a huge finish!
Well, let's hope it doesn't come to that.
Thanks to the Butcher Shop, Dixon and Kayleen. Please welcome Scotty, No I Don't Know Why I Got Fired Masters, Ben the Governor Edwards,
and Steve Golden Tonsils Payos.